some of the history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
She's recording you anyway right now. You can't even tell with that little...
I'm saying a lot of things I shouldn't say. I won't tell you how much I weigh.
Oh. Here, so I'll plug it in over here.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, Ambrose, we were still living in Mount Calvary, and we had a historical society. We started a historic, and Ambrose was the president of the historical society.
Yeah. In Mount Calvary, you
mm-hmm. did? It was a short-lived. Anyway, so, you know, they wanted to have the history of the area, and I said, well, you know, I tell you what, I said, I'm going to ask my dad, because my dad had a good mind, and I said, I'm going to ask him to come to my house, and Ambrose, how would it be if you come, and we, both you and I, will interview dad?
Ambrose liked that.
Now, when you listen to Ambrose, my nephew, who's an attorney in Milwaukee, and I mentioned that he's an attorney in Milwaukee because he can be critical. So when he listened to that tape, he says, I don't like the way that man interviewed your dad. And I said, Paul, you are the only one that has ever said this.
Yeah.
Because you've got to know Ambrose Bierschbach to appreciate it.
Oh, God, yes.
So much so. You know Jerry Schneider's orchestra?
Yeah.
You know Jerry Schneider's orchestra?
Certainly.
Well, his sister Betty Deppis lives on the lake. Betty and Al Deppis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So one time I decided the people who live on the lake should know about this. So I had invited them all over, the Kaifenheims and, you know, Wayne Miller.
Yeah.
Wayne Miller and the Deppises and some of the people, Muldoons and so on. We had a couple of drinks first, you know. That's important too. So anyway, so they listened to this tape. And they just were very interested in it. So Betty Deppis asked her brother Jerry Schneider of the Jerry Schneider Orchestra. He has a recording studio in Chilton,
yes,
right
sure.
in his home.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, would you mind coming if we make enough? We already talked to Jerry. He said, sure. Would you mind coming and bringing this tape? Jerry wants to make a copy, but also as you go along, maybe you can stop the tape and explain things. You know what I'm saying mm-hmm. is? So that's why I've got these copies, because it was done in Jerry Schneider's recording studio.
Okay.
So you have the original recording, and then you have kind of an additional material to go along with it.
This
then.
Is better than the original
right,
recording.
Right, so, okay, wow.
But anyway...
That was a really good idea.
Yeah,
I told her.
This is wonderful.
That's why I told her she should be here to hear this. And
it's very valuable.
Oh.
Why is it valuable?
Because it's history.
A part of history we would lose. Sooner or later, we will lose it.
Well, I know.
And we don't want to lose it. We're trying to record for the museum. We're trying to keep.
And I give you people a lot of credit for that. I appreciate it.
Well,
I really give you a lot of credit for that, but I ended up being a reading teacher.
I heard about you last night. Yeah, go
ahead. Oh yeah, okay, that's.
But
great.
Anyway, but I really, really wanted to be a social studies, a history teacher, because I loved history, and along the way, as I was taking courses at Marion College, I knew some of the teachers. Because I was already teaching at St. Mary's, I had teaching certificate because I went to a rural normal. You know what I'm saying is, and so some of those nuns at St. Mary's said she really should get her certification in reading because they knew that I was very interested in teaching reading to the lower grades. You know what I'm saying? If you don't if you have a poor teacher in first and second grade,
right,
you have trouble in school all the time as far as reading is concerned, yeah. You know. But anyway, now where did I get off on what was I talking about?
No, that's all right.
Huh?
But you go ahead. Why don't you go
ahead? So this is your father who's being interviewed.
Mm-hmm. And we were living in Mount Calvary.
Okay.
There, when Iris Fitzgerald took over, you had Wayne King, you had...
Just a minute.
Louis Panico, Dick Jurgens, and...
That must be just...
Who is that speaking?
My dad.
Okay.
And when was this interview taken? What year about?
I think it says it in the beginning.
Oh, okay, good.
I can't remember. Okay. When you get 90 years old, your mind isn't so good anymore.
There's a lot to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can set it here if you'd like. Want to just set it down
here?
Yeah.
I want to get it.
Sure.
Just a minute, I'm going to stop this and I'll rewind it again. Okay. As you know, I'm not good with machines.
Leave it right there now. No. It'll show up. There's a little dead spot in front. There you got it.
There you go.
It'll be fine now. You can hear it.
Tonight, we have with us today two very eminent people. Mr. Ambrose Birchow, who is the president of our newly organized historical society in Mount Calvary, and Mr. Chris Furman, who is a resident of the area and has been a resident of the area all of his 86 years. I am very special to Mr. Furman because he happens to be my father. Mr. Furman was born
in 1882,
has lived in the West Lake area from the day that he was born. Today, we are going to have Andrew interview him about the history of the West Lake area. We feel that Dad has a lot to offer.
Just turn the volume down a little bit. Start it up again. And then
I can do that for you.
Do it.
I'm so dumb.
No.
Don't worry about it.
No, it's no problem at all.
The volume is a little high.
Yeah.
Okay. I am very, very sure that he is a walking encyclopedia.
There.
My dad is
so,
yeah.
So, Ambrose, I think that you are going to be very, very pleased with all the very interesting things that Dad has to tell you about the Wolf Lake area.
That's Ambrose. He's a unique person.
Could you tell us what the activities consisted of? Was it pretty much as it is today?
No, not at all.
Can you hear it okay?
This Wolf Lake area in my younger days, they had a big building at Wolf Lake.
Across the lake.
Two dance halls. And in those days, the people before the cars, they'd come to Calvary or St. Cloud, and the farmers would pick them up and bring them over to Wolf Lake, and they'd stay there for weeks. Some of the same people, they come every year for, especially one couple, they come there for 40 years.
Oh, Crystal Lake.
Okay, when Dad talks about Wolf Lake, he talks about across the lake, on the east side of the lake. Not Hollywood. It is the east side of the lake where now is the Wolf Lake Park.
That was the only place where they had a picnic on 4th of July. They had two bands. And in the forenoon, I never forget, they had a steamboat. And they steamboat was run by Matt Deason. He was a brother-in-law of the Steffes brothers that owned the place. And they drove with one band, they drove around Wolf Lake all forenoon on 4th of July. And the people, they come from Fond du Lac all over with horse and buggy to Wolf Lake.
Okay?
Ambrose.
What year is this you're referring to now? Could you tell us?
Well, when this happened, well, I'm 86 years old now, and then I was maybe 10, 12 years, about 10 years old, I would say.
Right. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
I understand it was a very common thing those years that bands played. They're quite regular, and people really attended very well.
Well, that is, you're talking about Hollywood?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they had on the name bands playing there when Harry Fitzgerald took over. They had Wayne King, they had Louis Panico, Dick Juergens, and all the name bands played at Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Even they had such a crowd that all the art was just full of cars.
We're parked down by that farm down here.
It has been said that large boats were on the lake, given boat rides. Have you any idea what charges were there to have a ride?
You know, there wasn't a large boat. They had the first motors. Well, at that time with the steamboat, I don't remember what they charged, but afterwards they had a motorboat. That was the time when Steve Oliver and Pete Reeder operated the boat. That is after the big building burned down at Wolf Lake.
Of course.
I think we better go back again. When they refer to the big bands, that was Hollywood. Hollywood wasn't built until about 1924, 25. And the dance hall that Dad's talking about is was probably in existence in the early 1900s. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. And when he talks about the big steamboat, that was in the days when they had the dance halls in at the park, and way before the time of Hollywood.
Dress-wise, would the ladies wear plain dresses, or did they wear those long black and dark clothing which was customary those years?
Well, that changed over the years. Way back they wore long clothes, but afterwards that they used just what you call calico or what.
About what year did the cottages surrounding Wolf Lake begin to come in existence?
In 1922 or 23, there were three cottages, Art Schmitz, John Petterman, and Pete Endringer. And then in 1924 or 25, yeah, then Hollywood was built. And then the year after Hollywood was built, they bought land from us, and they built three cottages. 24,
25,
yeah. The original, the first cottages at Wolf Lake were not on the west side of the lake. They were on the east side of the lake. And the very first cottage that was built at Wolf Lake was built by a man by the name of Bauman.
In fact, if you look at it, it's the yellow one.
I think that somebody by the name of Dorn owns that cottage. And, you know, and when the cottages on the west side of the lake were built, that was at the time when Hollywood was built.
Bordering Wolf Lake, later known as the Everett's Farm, did ever enter your mind that someday lots would be sold off of that farm?
No. That Hollywood is...
The Everett's Farm... That is where my mother was born and raised, and my grandpa built that house. That's the first place west of the boat landing on the same side, okay?
Oh, wow.
And
Victor Steffes.
Huh? Victor Steffes is on the other side. Victor Steffes is on the east side of the boat landing, but the Everett's place that my grandpa and Petrie built is on the west side of the boat landing, and it's that big brown house now, you know.
Okay.
Okay. And so that tells about how, well, let's play it again. Continue.
My wife's home land there, and it was sold to Everett's. And then Everett sold 3 acres to Benny Cleansing, where Hollywood is on, and then that same year, 3 cottages were built.
The price that one lot sells for now, could that be about half of the price what Mr. Petrie, your father-in-law, paid for the complete farm?
That is right. That's right.
The beautiful home that still stands on the Everett's farm, formerly Petrie Farm, which now is falling apart, going to pieces. Have you any idea what that home cost when it was built?
That was mother born.
Oh, it didn't cost $3,000, less than $3,000, and it was built when Ma and I were 12 years old.
Okay, the Everett's farm, the house on that farm was built by my mother's dad, that was Jacob Petrie. And the house wasn't quite completed yet when the mother died. She was only 42 years old. And then later on, after the children were all married, he sold the farm to Everett's. And at one time, it was really falling apart. But the house has really been remodeled, and it's in very good condition. And it's the house that's on just west of the boat landing. It's
that
Randy brown
Schneider
house.
Bought
the
it.
People that
he
own it
now
have done
it.
A good job. But that is, that land at one time was all owned by my grandfather, where Hollywood stands on.
Mm-hmm.
The final and the last question, what would have people done or said when these picnics were going, were in progress, if young people would have entered the park or the grounds in the scanty or just about new clothing that they, and would have come and joined the people?
It wouldn't have been accepted. That really would have been a riot, I guess.
Can you hear that all?
Because we never saw anything like it. In fact, in my day, when I went to dances, the girls were not allowed to come in the tavern. When we went to dance at Wolf Lake, the girl you took there, she sat in the waiting room. When the band started playing, you went and got her and go in the dance hall.
What kind of music was played by the bands those years? Waltzes? Polkas? Foxtrots?
Yeah.
Or did they have country western?
They had polka and I remember in later years the foxtrot come along. That would have been in about 1912 or 13.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Furman, for your fine answers.
Thank you, Ambrose. Thank you, Ambrose and Dad. You did a good job, but I think that maybe we should backtrack. And we'd like to distinguish Wolf Lake Resort from Hollywood Resort. Wolf Lake Resort was in existence many, many, many years before Hollywood Resort was ever thought about. So we're going to go back and we'll ask you questions about the original owners of Wolf Lake and what that was like. Okay, Emma?
Mr. Furman, who were the owners of the original Wolf Lake Resort?
As far back as I can remember, were the Steffes brothers, Anton, Joe, and Mike. And after the big building burned down, Anton moved to Chilton, and Mike, he moved the old boathouse up, and he had a little tavern and a living quarters in that boat house. That's many, many years ago.
Tell about the steamboat in the early 1900s.
Well, they had a steamboat there, and when they had picnics, I don't remember what they charged. It wasn't much, but they make trips around the lake. I know one time at Fourth of July, they had overloaded it, and my mom was on there, and the motor stopped on them, and they had quite a time getting to shore. I remember that. But they had two bands on Fourth of July, and then one band was on that steamboat, and they drove around Wolf Lake all forenoon playing. The band was playing. It was just wonderful.
I understand that they had bowling alleys in those years.
Yeah.
Did they have any other activities as they have now?
Well, the hall...
Across the lake again.
The hall on the south side of the big building didn't burn down. And then there was one alley, and they bowled out from the tavern. They had the big tavern door open there. That they pull out from the tavern, and many a time I set pins there. And then Ellie went when they took the seats away on the east side, and then for a dance they had the seats back up there again.
What happened to the original place, or was it replaced with another building?
Well, like I said, Mike Steffes, he moved that boathouse up there, and he fixed a little tavern and living quarters. But then Steve Adler and Pete Reeder bought the place, and they raised that building up, but they built underneath it. Up on top, I told that too many people already, that's the old boathouse. Then after they sold to Benny Cleansing, he added, I don't know how many bedrooms and stuff on the west side, and he built an addition to it. He had an enormous business there at that time. The people, they still come, as us before, their cars were so numerous, they come and stayed there. There was even people that everybody knew in the neighborhood. You know, and there was one man, old man Riff, they called him. He was a salesman for men's clothing. He come there for over 40 years, him and his wife, and he stayed a couple of months. And then every Saturday night, he had an accordion and some instrument, had his own band, and we'd go over there and dance on Saturday night.
At one time, Wolf Lake had a post office. When did this discontinue?
As soon as the rural route started, that was, and they always had somebody, I believe it was only once a week, that would get the mail at Calvary and bring it to the post office that was a store and post office that Steffes had.
At Wolf Lake, yeah.
At Wolf Lake. Mm-hmm. And the neighbor's pharmacy come and got their mail.
Would you know about what year this was before the railroad route had started?
Well, when the building burned down, I was about 12 years old. Yeah. Oh.
About 1902, something like that? In the early 1900s, 1902?
I would say in 1908 or 10. I would say. Pete Nice, Peter Nice, brought the first mail by us, and Joe Brown went out to Western Farms with the horses in those days.
Thank you, Chris, for your fine information pertaining to Wolf Lake.
Okay.
All right, we have a few corrections to make again. Dad, you said that you thought that the post office was a little earlier than 1910. About what time do you think it was?
I would say 6 or 7.
1906 or 7,
yeah.
About that time.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember how many years this post office was in existence at Wolf Lake?
In Wolf Lake?
Yes.
That I don't remember, because as long as I went to Wolf Lake, the Roman Steffes was my age and a friend of mine. That's where I got to be upset with his.
Mm-hmm.
We'd get a the school that the Faber boys were hauling the mail over there, and afterwards Grandpa Petrie hauled it for a while. I remember they had a two-wheel pony of Sophie there, and they'd go and tell them and get the mail.
I see, they picked it up at Telby Station and they would bring it up to Wolf Lake.
Yeah.
But Wolf Lake did have a post office stamp, because I can remember seeing cards that, that you know, you have in your door at home that said Wolf Lake, Wisconsin.
Me?
A postal stamp, you know, a stamp that was sent to somebody.
It must have been Ma's stamp, right?
Yeah, Wolf Lake, Wisconsin.
And also that Ma and Gillian, they stayed home for the July so they were old enough to dance. They'd put the horse in the barn and they'd get a quarter, and it was big money in those days. They'd fill their barn and imagine how far the people walked.
Hmm. Well, he tells about mother and her sister staying home and not going to the picnic, because they would, the people would come and park their horses in their barn that they came to the picnic. And when we talk about that, Wolf Lake, of course, is where Wolf was, where Wolf Lake Park is now. They would, people would walk. They would park their buggies and their horses at their barn, and which is where the boat landing is. It's just a little bit west of the boat landing. You can imagine people walking. That must be, well, not quite a mile, I think.
Not only that, but you have to think, they weren't wearing shorts or pedal pushers or slacks. The women were wearing long dresses and petticoats. You know what I'm saying is? And I am sure that they had high, probably, shoes that were...
Yes, laced up.
Laced up, you know.
Sure.
But you know, when you think about that, we really have had it easy compared to what people did for even amusement.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
You want to listen to some more?
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, they'd come back and get their horses.
On both sides of the road, from Wolf Lake up to Tony Mee's and up the other way. Oh, then that's how Wolf is on that. How do you visit him? Oh, you know. My dad said, is that Tony Mee's?
Okay.
Where were we now?
You were saying that the horses were tied up all along
yeah,
the way?
Yeah, and then Pa would always said sometimes we'd have a thunderstorm. It killed all the horses with the old wire fences, you know.
Now, you said that the people used to park their horses at Mother, at their
yeah.
home. And is that about a mile from Wolf Lake?
Read a secret.
That's, let's see, that's 40, little over half a mile.
People would walk
to
Wolf Lake, and
sure.
then they come back again.
And I remember when I couldn't go along yet, and we had the windmill. I climb up the windmill and count the cars coming from Calgary.
Cars or buggies?
Right, the buggies, the horses. Coming from Calgary with just one string, even they started in the forenoon. Like my dad never, he always saw to it that we didn't have no hay dry on 4th of July.
Why?
They could go to the picnic.
Oh,
nobody didn't want to work on 4th of July.
Well, that was pretty nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, now we have another correction. You said that, you want to correct this, you said
free
that they had. That part of the building did not burn down, but upon thinking about it, you say that you realize now that it did burn down.
That was a mistake. That building, that hall burned down too. But I distinctly remember the next or the second 4th of July, I think Steve Wavell and Pete Rader must have, they laid a rough floor in open air. There was no roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we danced 4th of July on that rough floor. That I remember.
But you also say that you watched the fire. You were
oh yeah, we watched the fire. Sister let us go home. I go out and we all went to Wolf Lake and watched the fire. And that building was...
St. Joe, you know where St. Joe is?
Yes.
That's where Dad went.
Okay, when he talks about Sister letting them, they could watch the fire from school, there is a St. Joe, that was St. Joe. Where St. Joe is... today, and that's where he went to school. Of course, it wasn't the same building. It was an old wooden building that Dad went. So he talks about the sister allowing them to go to watch the fire that would walk from St. Joe to Wolf Lake.
Not that far.
Fires on the west side, and there was such a strong wind, that building just burned, that bedroom stay stood there yet. Oh, and then the fire department, those days, they could have saved that building.
There was no fire department?
Oh, no. Just let it burn.
In other words, you went to St. Joe is now, you went to school there, right?
Yeah.
And you went from St. Joe up to Wolf Lake to watch the fire?
Yeah. Sister had looked out of the window.
Can you hear
and,
this?
And she said, oh, it looks like building is burning. And she said, you can all go home, only stay out of the way. Mm-hmm. Then I remember Sister Blitz us.
What grade were you in about then?
Huh?
Well, there was no such thing as a grade, right? What,
no,
you were
I
in readers, was that right?
Well, I was in the, they call it the fourth reader then already.
Were you smart?
Yeah, because I was in the third reader before I went to Catholic school. I went to public school. So in the afternoon, I had to go in the other room because English, I was way ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. So you finally finished going to the public school in your education, too, didn't you?
No, and then I went to the public school, in the eighth grade. That was it.
I suppose that's like having made college today.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you are.
Yeah,
so
we had to write a diploma, you know, took 3 days.
Yeah.
And then you saw that picture already. That.
Your diploma.
Yeah. And I don't want this recorded.
How did you come out in that? Did you do pretty well in the test?
Well, yeah. Probably shouldn't record
that. Oh, I want to know.
Huh?
That, no, I think, well, thanks, Dad. I think this is interesting.
Late,
good afternoon. Today we are recording Dad again in Ambrose, and 2 weeks later. Today is December 17th, 1978, and today Ambrose is going to interview Dad about Calvary Station. Okay, Ambrose, take it.
Mr. Foreman, could you give me some history pertaining to Calvary Station?
They call it Calvary
First
Station
of all,
because the railroad.
The name Bull was a very prominent name at Calvary Station.
Remember Bull Place?
From where did Bull they Ford originate prior to moving to Calvary Station?
From Sheboygan.
Who was the first resident to move to Calvary of the Bull family?
Well, that I wouldn't know, but the old Frank Bull, him and his wife, if they had, they must have had children already, I don't know. But I understand that the railroad wasn't there yet when the Bull first come there. Shortly after the railroad, I was told, was built up to Calvary Station, and that was it.
You know what Calvary is?
Because the reason for that, going to Pound Lake, they couldn't go down the ledge. You know, they had a little ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, they made a bridge, you know. I still remember where the train went down the ledge, you know. That's okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that held them up for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It has been said that Mrs. Frank Bull, the wife of Frank Bull, was known as the treasurer or the money keeper. Tell us something about her and how she went about handling the money.
This is interesting.
I still remember she sat in the rocking chair in the store, and those days the big skirts, and she had a pocket on the right hand side, and she had one of those big pocketbooks, and when any of the Bull family needed money, I remember that Henry and Ellen Frank, and she'd take out and give them so much money. She had the money in that before the banks, you know.
That's what you call the matriarch.
In other words, she was the bank.
Huh?
She was the
yeah
bank.
John L. Bull, or Otto Bull, also acted as money handlers. Could you tell us something about these two citizens?
Well, I still remember that when barley got up to 50 cents a bushel, well, then the wagons were parked toward
was an order out where the old cheese factory was and up to Henry Fritz's blacksmith shop.
That's Calgary.
And that old gas end or kerosene engine to Lowe's Barley where you could hear late in the night. Then J.L. Bull would take the 8 o'clock train to Fond du Lac and come back at 11 o'clock, and he got a big stack of money to pay off these people, you know.
Did he do this every day?
No.
Later years, I understand they also had their own bank.
Yeah. When they built the new building, I don't exactly remember when it was. It must have been before 1910. You said the bank, Mount Calvary, was 10?
1909.
Could have been 1912 or 13, and they built their own bank.
The Bull family were very much musical minded. Tell us a little about them.
They had like J.L. and Henry and Frank and Otto was really a musician, and they had their own band. And I still remember, I was very young yet, that Pa took me along to the picnic at Wolf Lake, and the Bull band were playing. But afterwards, Henry had a big family, and his family started a band.
Wally
Bull. Wally Bull's
Blue Derby.
Did Calgary Station provide for overnight lodging for people who traveled? What I mean, did they have any furnished bedrooms?
Yeah, after they built the new building, some evenings when we come there was 6-7 traveling men sitting in the tavern. They stayed overnight. And then Peter Knight, well, maybe you want to ask.
At one time, Bose had a grocery store, a dry goods store, hardware. What other line of merchandise was available at their store?
Well, anything that the farmers needed. And I remember when young couples got married, they'd go by Bowles, they'd buy the stove, they'd buy the furniture, they'd buy everything by Bowles.
Is it also true that they served meals to the people, to the public?
What do you mean by that?
I think maybe he means that the people who stayed there.
Yeah.
Like you said,
oh, yeah. Yeah, and they always bragged about their meals. They had Mary Bull, and then they had Lizzie Holtzman. You remember working there for years? You must remember that. And they served. Oh, many a times I ate there, because afterwards, when I was director of the bank, and the bank used to have their annual meeting the same day that our insurance company had the meeting in Mount Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my dad along, and we go to the insurance meeting, and in the evening we eat dinner, supper by Bowles, and we stay for the bank meeting.
Very amazing to me. It has been said that they also had a tailor shop and a barber shop. Do you recall the name of the tailor or the barber's name?
I don't know his first name, but the last name was Peel. Peel, and he had, I even cut my hair already. And that was at an old building where Joe Brown place, now where he built a garage. It had been standing there only maybe 15 years ago. It was still there.
It has been said that they also had a shop where they vulcanized tires.
That was when the new building was put up, what used to be the grocery store. Arnold Petrie from St. Cloud had a tire shop there, vulcanizing, and he'd come every morning with a hand car up the railroad track from St. Cloud.
Otto also was a music instructor. We hear so much of trading of books in hides and so forth. How did they go about this? And or has it been said that one of the Bulls made a yearly trip to Alaska, and why?
Yeah, that's why he had a store in Alaska, and in the spring, John Bull would go to Alaska. I don't remember how many years, but it was quite a long time. and then in the fall he'd come back and Philip Adler stayed over Windsor to run the store.
Now who was Philip Adler?
Philip Adler got married to Tina Stonework afterwards.
Any relation to the Philip Adler who's a brother of Mick Adler?
It was Philip Adler's dad's brother over here.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Bo also had a lumber yard. Who was in charge? Do you recall this?
Frank Bo, the second Frank Bo.
Calvary Station also had their own depot agent. Was this also a part of the Bo family?
Henry Bo had been there for years as the depot agent.
Calvary Station had a dairy or a small cheese factory. Mm-hmm. Tell me something about this.
Well,
bathroom. Use your bathroom.
Bailey's.
I'll do it.
The Bailey's, Bailey brothers in their old building had a cheese factory there, and it's known as the Bailey Spear cheese. And they, there was a secret to it. They wouldn't let nobody in the cheese factory see how they made that. Then afterwards, the Bulls, they built a new factory and a dwelling on the corner there, you remember, with. And,
is that where the senior center is now?
Yeah. Well, no, not in that building. This was right by the road. And then Nick Kretschbach made his first cheese there for many years, and he bought the factory from the Bulls. And this building where the Baileys, they had to move out there because the Bulls needed, there was a basement under there, and that's where Bulls, you know, everybody butchered a cow in those years, all the farmers, and he had the hides down in there. He had some kind of a brine solution, and they piled those stacks and stacks.
Leather.
And when the Jew come and bought them, the hair and everything was gone. It almost looked like leather already. You know?
Mm. No?
All right.
Now we move south of the railroad tracks. I understand that business places were also established on that side. Soft drink factory, a grain elevator, furniture store. Was this also a part of the Bo family?
No, there was no grain elevator south of the tracks. There were two elevators north of the tracks. But south of the tracks, the Hensians built a store. Joe Hensian. And I got a suit there already. He's selling suits and stuff. And his wife died young. And who took over the store at that time, I remember. I don't remember. But later, Steve Steely, that had learned the store business from, had worked at the Bulls, he started a grocery store and a tavern in the Hensian building. And as far as that, talking about soft drink, before my time, that was a tavern, and there was a guy by name Pete Crowley. he had that tavern there. He was a grandpa of Bruce Falls, you know. And then after Peter Knight,
I guess maybe.
That must be it. Huh?
Do we rewind? I think this minute.
Or is it on the other side? It.
You just flip it.
Take it off.
I think all you do is flip it.
Let's see what's. Yeah. Are you doing that right?
Oh, you gotta slide in a little. There you
on
go.
Top.
No.
I'm joking.
I just wanted to show you this. Dorothy Blitzky, who interviewed me about Wolf Lake, she came and she interviewed me about. How should I say this? She called, and after she had interviewed me about Wolf Lake and, you know, that crossroads picture there. That's, but anyway, so she wanted to know, she was with a reporter, she was given the job of doing the history, interviewing people about about when Calvary Station, and the reason it's called Calvary Station is because the railroad ran through there, and this, like Dad talked about, the station.
Yeah,
sure. So I thought, well, Butch Olig, Myrtle Olig, was Myrtle Gaelic. Mm-hmm. And it was her dad that ended up buying this place in Calvary Station from the Bows.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Myrtle had a lot of information about the history of Calvary. So I invited her to come here and have this Dorothy Blitzky interview her. And she had this picture of this used to be this Bows store right here. You know, this is the elevator that Dad talks about, the elevator. She had that picture. And then, you know, this is Eugene Brown.
Eugene Brown.
Yeah, and this is what that store that they're talking about, that big store.
Yep.
There was the bank was in there. Here was the bank. And then they had the groceries. And best of all, there was a tavern, too.
Of course.
So the bank was on the left.
Over
and
here,
the
yeah.
tavern in the middle, and what was on the right?
That's where they sold the groceries, and okay. where Dad said they people even bought their furniture when they got married, you know, and all of that.
Gotcha.
And see, and then this was the station, you know, and this is Butch Olig, who she used to work in her dad bought this from the Bows, you know, but so he did this story. And so,
Puddleford.
And you know why it was Puddleford? You know why?
Why?
Because there used to be, now I didn't live there yet.
Okay.
My dad tells you about that. There was a low area and there was a pond.
Pond. There's a puddle.
And they did something, the people of Mont settled there to fill that in so it wasn't a pond anymore.
Oh.
And then after the pond was gone and they filled it up, they called it Puddleford. German. Puddleford means the pond is gone.
Oh.
The pond is gone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's why it's Puddleford.
And I never knew why it was. I knew puddle was pond. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, as you can tell, yeah. my dad had a good mind.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Like your mind.
Well, I don't think my mind is as good as Dad's.
And this article is from the Fond du Lac Reporter from February 26, 2006.
And in fact, she was interviewed here. Blitzky came here because she interviewed me about Wolf Lake. You know, Crossroads, and that's another story about that.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to be 100 years old, people want to interview you.
This is wonderful. Wonderful. So your dad is talking on the other side of the tape here, too?
I think so, sure. Yeah, I know it because it's... But see here, this is...
There's a bell. Hey.
This guy has a lot
well,
of...
Well, we're...
Yes, he's
I'm
a dear friend.
I'm out right now.
Uh-huh. Yep.
We're interviewing...
How wonderful.
Used to be
yeah, he called Bill this morning. He called me last night. He's just tickled pink.
There was a line fence there. If you remember in the old days, then they put rails out into the lake so the animals wouldn't swim around
sure.
the end of the
yeah.
fence.
Yeah.
Somewhere they, up here, they were making fence. And they saw two sturgeon swimming out here. They saw them several times. And then Hollywood at the time... Well, Hollywood at the time. There's no Hollywood anymore, but
right.
it was there was a that was the place to go.
The resort.
That was the resort.
Yep.
The Ray Schmitz was the owner. Leonard Lair was the bartender. And Leonard Lair also saw this sturgeon, these sturgeon. And he decided he was going to get one of them. Mm-hmm. So Grandpa came by my dad and got my dad's sturgeon spear. So, as things would have it, on a Friday night was the night at Hollywood. There was white hair. There was free movies in the parking lot at Hollywood on Friday nights. Okay? So, Grandpa and Grandma and I that time I would spend the summers out on the farm. Grandpa and Grandma and I went to the free movies. And we're sitting there and all of a sudden you could see there's somebody coming through the crowd looking, well, he's looking for Grandpa. Chris, come with us.
Chris Furman.
You got to go with us. Okay. So Grandpa left. He didn't come back. Well, when the movies were over, you don't know my grandma, but my grandma was more than a little bit annoyed that Grandpa had disappeared and not come back. So we went out looking for Grandpa while he was in the bar, and there was just crazy excitement going on. We didn't know why, and they didn't tell me why. Well, finally we went home. Next morning, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, the yard over there was full of cars. Went up in the granary, under some feed bags, was this sturgeon. Leonard Lair, the night before, had seen it, come along the shore, went and got the spear, threw it, hit it on the head. You know what happens when you hit him on the head.
Sure.
You knock him out. So he pulled the spear back in, threw it again. By that, the fish came too. The fish darn near pulled him in. Finally, he got it in. They took it out. Well, then they got Grandpa. They took it over in the granary. Grandpa had a platform scale. They weighed it. It weighed 176 pounds.
Oh, we wanted to know that. That's what the DNR wanted to know.
Yeah. That's a big sturgeon.
You better believe it was. Yeah. So then they took it out. They took it out in the backyard behind the summer kitchen, hung it up in the tree, and that's where you got the picture with Grandpa and the guy with the cigarette in his mouth. That's Leonard Lair. That's the guy that got it. Then they proceeded to butcher it. They put a big laundry tub underneath it.
Yeah.
When the guts and the eggs and the head were in it, the wash tub was 3/4 full. And we walked right out in the field, right out in the middle of an alfalfa field, dug up the alfalfa, dumped the whole thing in, and covered it up. I could show you the spear if you wanted to see the spear. The tines were all twisted from this fish fighting so much. Then after that, I know 1 year, but I think 2 years, there was a season out here. I think two. But nobody ever saw another fish.
And the lake was covered with fishing shacks.
That would have been in 1950. 51 then.
Would you guys like some coffee? I need some coffee.
The picture says...
I think I'm fine.
The picture says 1949.
Well, if that's what it says, that's what it is. So I said I figured I was 8 to 10. I don't remember how old I was. I just... That's what I remember of it.
When we were born.
41.
41. I still think it was 45.
No, it was not. It was not. Mm-hmm. It was not.
You were not. You were older than 4 years old.
Yes, I was.
This one says 47.
Again, is there somebody wants coffee? I made coffee.
I'll have one.
You have one.
Okay, if Bill is, then I will.
Would you like coffee?
Sure.
That would be lovely. Thank you.
No, never touch it.
Water?
No, I'm fine.
I give you water and put a little gin in it.
No. No, no.
Now you're talking. So there was a sturgeon season out here?
After that. You know, nobody said anything, but all of a sudden there was a sturgeon season out here.
Okay, all right. So suddenly people were
they wise knew. To the DNR got wise to it.
There was just not a really a legitimate sturgeon season. The guys just went sturgeon.
No, out there. There was a season. There was an open season on Wolf Lake for 2 years. And after that, it was well known that there was no more sturgeon season on Winnebago, on Wolf Lake. It wasn't like it was just the guys came out here. No, there was an established season, to my knowledge of it.
Yeah. Did you go out with anybody? Or did
with
you,
my dad and my uncle Elmer, yeah.
Okay.
These are all written in 49. I can read it right here, 1949.
Well, so then it was like 50 and 51 when the season was. Yeah. So I was 8 years old then.
I was in the Korean thing. I didn't get to see that.
No. I was too young.
So, thank you so much.
Now, I'll have you know that it isn't very often that I get these mugs out because these are the Mount Calvary Bank. Oh. And the last year that Ray was at the bank, he ordered those and gave them to the stockholders for, for Christmas.
Well, thank you.
And this is yours, by the way.
That's the bank.
I better sit.
Jim, what is there an in? I mean, is there, is this lake connected to anything else? Is there?
Well, there's Giltner's Lake over there.
Okay.
And that there's a slough runs through here. It's not nearly as pronounced anymore as it used to be. And then there's an outlet that actually drains all the way down to Sheboygan River.
Oh, okay. So there
west
is
of St. Cloud.
Yeah. Would you like some water?
No, no, I'm fine. No.
Eventually, with brandy, this... brandy in it, would you like
no,
it?
No,
no. I have to give him
water. So eventually, this is connected to Lake Michigan then?
In theory, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right. And so I asked Ron Brooks, yeah, and he asked me, how on earth did that fish get here?
Right.
He said, did somebody transport fish here? And then, we thinking way back to when all the immigrants came over here and all the Germans showed up, they had to build a dam on every river, mm-hmm, and they built one.
Okay, and also, on
sorry,
a napkin?
Oh, yeah, we'll get that.
Thank you.
Sure, thanks. Give her one.
Jim, I should give you some
no,
water.
No, just...
Thank you so
I'm fine.
Much.
So anyway, you need a napkin yet.
If I put gin in it,
no,
I'll take it.
No.
I have to give them. And I'm ruining your thing there. And I'm
no, you're
oh,
not.
No, you're not.
Oh, no. She, she won't edit anything out, I can tell you. But anyway, do you know that we've got to thinking, and this may come from you too, before the Sheboygan River had a dam built, the sturgeon in flooding times...
Oh, we never thought of that.
They
yeah
would migrate all the way up here. Sturgeon would do that.
Yeah.
And they think that that's possibly how they got in
here. See, Grandpa and Elmer saw two. The two of them would swim along here. They'd stand up here and look down on the lake.
Yeah.
They could see two at one time.
Yeah.
And did
yeah
they catch swim in both the, of them?
No, they only got one.
Only yeah the one.
Only the one.
See, they were there was a fence. This was far, here where we're living. That was farmland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In oh fact, yeah, I was interviewed by...
Who never thought of that? Dorothy it is connected all the way to Lake Michigan.
Sure.
And, you know, earlier years there was a lot of sturgeon in Lake Michigan.
Oh, well, yeah.
Reporter.
Okay.
And they wanted to do a story on Wolf Lake, so they came and interviewed me and my sister, Walita. Mm. And anyway, and I telling them, in fact, I think I still have some copies. Did you see that? When, in fact, story about Wolf Lake, the reporter did, crosswords, it was 19, whenever. But anyway, this land here, my dad went through this thing where he had to raise like 3-4 acres of potatoes. And usually that potato field was here. And guess who had to hoe the potatoes?
Oh, yeah.
And guess who had to stay home from school when the potatoes were being dug? All of us.
You didn't turn out too bad because of that.
Oh, thank you. Really, you know what I'm saying is?
That's a lot of potatoes to dig out.
Yeah.
Now, someone in a conversation just last week told me that there was, I don't know how big a boat this was. Mm-hmm. Someone had boats on Lake Winnebago, and they had some doings over here at Wolf Lake. Did you tell me that story?
I have a tape here. When we interviewed my dad 2 years before he died, because he was born and raised about a mile and a half away from here, and mother's great-grandfather, mother, owned most of this land on the lake, you know. And in fact, if you look at the map on 1832 or 1838 or whatever, it says... Petrie, my mother's grandparents, you know. But at one time, Wolf Lake was named De Haas Lake after Dr. De Haas, who came here from Germany, and he had a brewery here. You know that too?
Yep.
And that brewery, when I talked to my ancestors years ago, they're gone. I'm the ancestor now. They think it was on this side of the lake.
Mm-hmm. I see.
You know more about it than I think I do.
Well, I just read the book again the other night, the De Haas book, because he wrote a book about immigrating for the Germans.
I have a copy of that,
too. Yes, us too at the museum.
Yeah.
So, and I kind of just read over it briefly to get an idea of what was going on in this area.
Yes.
So
it's called The Emigrants?
Fascinating book.
Yeah.
But they have the pictures in there, the brewery and the homestead of the De Haases. So,
and they think that it was here on this side of the lake, you know. But anyway, did you know that, Jim? See now what you learned?
See, I'm learning things.
You have a lot to offer, but also we offer, you know, but anyway.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So somewhere in that lake there's one sturgeon.
Well, chances are not.
They may have died, and we know now through the sturgeon on Lake Winnebago that when the sturgeon dies, it doesn't necessarily float on up on the shore like a normal fish that has a float bladder and whatever. Mm-hmm. These sturgeon will probably sink, you know.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. It's a very good chance that you'd never find that fish.
Mm-hmm. Ah, so that's maybe what happened.
Yeah.
I was thinking there was a period of time after that when there was a lot of scuba divers out here.
Oh.
And I was wondering if maybe that's where the other one went.
Do you know if any fish were taken those 2 years when people...
I don't think anybody even saw one. Not that I ever heard.
Right.
But you got to remember, I was pretty young then.
But I don't recall. See, we were still living in Mount Calvary then. This was still a potato field.
Right.
That's what I know about it.
At that time, you hadn't even cleared the apple orchard, or did you?
Do you remember what we did?
No, I was gone, but Kathy told me and you this morning, because she dug out some old pictures of you and your home when you were building your home. And there was an apple orchard right there, and she said she remembered you and Ray coming there to cut the trees down, and you built your home next door.
That was we bought that lot from Meddy Schuster. He was an old bachelor, and he had this apple orchard, and of course he never took care of it or anything. And so when we bought that lot, which was next to Kathy was born and raised. Mm-hmm. Kathy's mother died. Did she die in childbirth?
She died when Kathy was 3 years old.
I know that she died very...
She had Hodgkin's.
Is that what she did? Yeah.
Yeah, which is like a blood disorder, leukemia type thing.
Yeah, so anyway, so then Ray and I, the pioneer woman has nothing on me.
No, not at all. But, you know, going back, this guy with the boats from Lake Winnebago, something was going on over here. I don't know now if Gene Brown told me the story or not, but they said that they moved one of his boats here for this occasion. And it was a big enough boat that he could sleep on it. So that one night he evidently stayed on his boat on the lake. And I don't know how...
I have this tape here that we... Do you remember Ambrose Birschbach?
Yes. Oh, gosh.
The
best memory in the world.
Well, you got that one right. But
I always
said,
Grandpa Furman would tell stories all the time. And my mom would always say, boy, and nobody ever argues with him. I always say, Mom, he's older than everybody else and nobody knows him.
But anyway...
Do you need anything else from me?
Huh?
I think that's probably...
Well, I didn't bring you any water with gin.
Don't worry about it. Because I'll leave then, unless you need some other information that I can give you from what I know.
I think that's...
Yeah. Basically,
yeah.
I mean, we wanted to know, and your part of this story is what we needed, because when Grandpa had the fish, you know, so...
Yeah, I was there. I was there. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
according to the pictures, I was 8, because I started driving tractor for pitching bundles when I was 6 years old. That was the youngest anybody around here had ever done that.
Gosh. And that's good to know that it was a female, too. They had eggs.
And the eggs were perfect.
Black.
So
they were black.
Wow.
In fact, you know, while it's still Schwartz Fish Company,
yeah,
on Friday nights was fish fries at Hollywood, and they asked, after the fact, they asked Schwartz, and Schwartz said, yeah, if you'd have given them to us, we'd have taken care of them for you. But
so otherwise, what happened to the eggs? It just,
they were buried out here in the alfalfa field.
You know what, what would be so nice, knowing what we're doing now with sturgeon, inside this big old hard head of a sturgeon, there's a little stone. Now, I don't know if you ever were familiar with, and the sheephead has a little stone. We always called it a lucky stone because we lived by the lake, Winnebago, and we'd find this little white stone that had an L on it. And this was always lucky stones. I must have had a dozen or more. But anyway, now we've found that in the head of a sturgeon, there is a stone that's similar, not quite like it, that they're cutting, they're taking this out of the sturgeon and sawing it. Our Sturgeon for Tomorrow group bought a saw for the DNR that they can cut this stone wafer thin. I mean, just thin. They can look at it in the microscope, and that will actually record the age.
You're
almost
kidding.
Like a tree.
Like a tree ring?
Yep.
And they can tell, believe it or not, when the country was testing the first atomic bombs, they put a lot of this into the air, and you can probably tell it better than
that. No, you're doing a terrific job.
And a lot of that, what would I say, is it went into the air,
the dust, the radioactive fallout.
The radioactive fallout. And all of us have some of that in our system. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they cut through a leg bone, they could do that too, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they could with a leg bone, but it's in our system. But they found out that little line is in this fish also.
You're kidding.
And they can say, well, this was back in 1940, whatever, when that was left in this fish through carbon dating. That's how they're finding it.
And and the fish was in the water, of course.
Yes.
Know.
And it still shows up.
And
because it still shows up in this fish because the fish, everything got saturated with this. And they're finding it through carbon dating. Mm-hmm. And so, and that, I'm sure Ron will have in her book.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you're writing about it no better than I do.
You're right on. And the thing that Ron's really found out is that the fish are older than a lot of scientists thought before.
Yes, and that's why,
really?
When you said this guy's buried out in his field, I keep thinking, boy, I wonder if that old hard head is still out there.
I bet it is.
And has that piece of bone.
The only thing that would bother me, I would say, I know they go and look for relics and stuff when they're moving roads and stuff.
Yeah.
The only thing would be is if we didn't bury it deep enough that it got hit with a plow.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I bet it's there.
I bet it would be there. And it'd be kind of interesting.
I could take you very close.
Nothing but an old bone head, you know. But that stone might be in there is what I'm driving at. Then we could tell, he could tell you then how old the sturgeon was.
Yeah.
You know.
So now what is your theory about, I think you did say that before, but this 90-year-old mind is forgetful.
I don't think so, yeah.
But anyway, do you think that somehow the Finger Lane got over here from Lake Winnebago with the connection of, or...
Mm-mm. We think it came from Lake Michigan.
Michigan.
Through the Sheboygan. Before the dams got built, which were built already in 1849.
Oh, those are old dams. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, really? That long ago?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
They were built.
Yeah, the Sheboygan marshes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when was the lock system between Winnebago and Green Bay? There's 17 locks.
Yeah, yeah.
So they could bring the logs up through the lock system because of that wild river. Yeah. They couldn't do it otherwise. Mm-hmm. So when that lock system got built, all of these areas were building a dam, and they'd put in a water wheel or maybe a little turbine, whatever, to get a little some power. Mm-hmm. And that's why they built all of them. But in the meantime, they were cutting off the spawning
Oh, yeah.
Of the sturgeon in the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. And they built one on every river. Mm-hmm. And Sturgeon Bay got its name from the sturgeon came into that big bay and couldn't go anywhere to spawn because it had built a dam to Lake Winnebago.
Do you know that it never occurred to me that Sturgeon Bay was named after a sturgeon?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Oh, no, but that's, you're right. It's such a, you know.
Well, that's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Now, I have this tape.
I'm going to go there.
I feel like I might have parked you in, so I think I need to.
I guess you did, but that's fine.
That we interviewed my dad, who had, I always said, rather than giving me his money, I was wishing he'd given me his mind, and I didn't get his mind.
I think you have it. I think you have it.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Casper.
Yes.
See you at Sturgeon for tomorrow, next fall, again at Twitter again.
Bye, Jimmy.
Yeah.
He was always Jimmy to me.
You come to our dinners, huh?
Have for...
See... And you know,
I always come with Bill Boss. You know him.
Oh yeah. See, and all these people know me, but I'm right up in front there usually, and I don't know all these people that are out there.
So your grandmother, your mother was a Petrie.
Yes.
I'll know you next
time. Okay. Do you know Frida Seifert?
If there's anything
she was
else,
a Coleman.
I guess if you'd want
my
to see that
first
spirit,
cousin, I love her. She
don't
lives in Green
it.
Bay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I have been thinking about.
She's my great aunt.
I gotta go to work.
Oh, bye, Jimmy.
Bye, Jim. Thank you.
I used to call him Jim.
George and Edna Beyer are brother and sister.
I remember now. There was kind of.
Yeah.
Frida is Bob.
Yep.
Frida's mother was my Aunt Clara, and they lived in St. Cloud, and we were very close to them. In fact, Bob and Lorraine took Valita, my sister Valita and I, to visit her in Green Bay. She lives in a very nice condo.
Yeah.
And we had lunch, and we had a one. Of course, nobody said a word when we got together.
See? And when I look at you, you look a lot like Frida.
Well, Frida is a very...
So you're first cousins, okay.
Oh, yeah, and not only were we first cousins, but we're also friends.
Okay.
You know, the cousins aren't always friends.
Frida is my great aunt.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So.
No, I see the connection. I remember the connection with the Byers.
Yep, yeah.
With George.
Yep.
In fact, I have a picture.
Uh-oh.
when George was in service.
Do you really?
Oh, is it him?
This is the surgeon, you know.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Well,
oh, goodness.
Remind me before you leave.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
no,
I'll
that's
look at
fine.
That. I just
because I'll take you.
I just ran across it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and she can head out then, you know, when you...
Yeah.
Sure, the one hang-up is that our computer with the scanner was not working. So I can't scan your photo right here, but I can take it to Fond du Lac and scan it at Walgreens and then bring it right back to you, if that's okay with you. Or
I think I can trust you.
Well
and otherwise,
I think I can find my way back.
Instead of coming all the way back, why don't you just bring it to my place?
Well, I can bring it back if you... I mean, I was keeping track of how we were coming.
Oh, I know, it's very confusing.
Yeah,
I was keeping track of how to get here when we were driving from Bill's house, so I can bring it back, Bill, just so
okay.
That...
Well, you know, I have this phobia, and it's not a good phobia, but it's also justified. A lot of times when I give things to people to return it to me, they don't return it.
Yeah, I know.
Has that happened to you guys too?
Yeah.
That's why I thought if I just went and did it and brought it right back, and then you know.
Well, anyway, but I have this tape that Ambrose Virchbach.
Yeah.
He's an icon. You know Ambrose Virchbach?
Yeah.
Did you know Ambrose?
He rings a bell.
That's quite a name.
He had. If you saw a picture of him, you would think he was. He had kind of distorted face, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was brilliant. He knew everybody that he knew when their birthday was and when they were married. And he even like...
He knew it all. He had an ingenious mind.
He knew how old they were. In fact, when my daughter's 21st birthday was... Mm-hmm. Not 21st. Yeah, 21st. Ambrose called me and he says, Estelle, I just thought I'd have to call you and wish you, wish your daughter her 21st birthday.
Oh.
That's Ambrose.
Yeah. How he could, I can't imagine.
That's amazing.
How to man, he met me at church one time and he said, "Now Betty, your sister Betty, and she was born in this date." Yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't remember Betty's birthday. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There were seven of us kids, you know. He remembered all of that. Yeah, if you want to.
Yep, I'm going to switch these for you.
I am going to.